Gang, you know, I'm a little bit depressed. Football, yeah, it's over. But the NBA, college basketball, the NHL, they're in full swing. Baseball's ramping up. The only place you should be betting on these sports is at betonline.ag. BetOnline, it even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. BetOnline has hundreds of props with real-time odds on almost anything you can imagine, and it's pretty fun. And of course, the 24-hour online casino. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, how are we doing today, gang? I am so glad you're here. Thank you very much. I can't tell you how much we and I appreciate you listening in and following us on social media at all of our various outlets, at Nick Hardwick, at Finding Center Podcast, and at Hardwick.life. We love the interaction, the feedback that you guys give through those outlets and the email. Here's something I want from you, though. I want more of your feedback, honestly. I want to give you guys exactly what you're here looking for, topics you want covered, people you want interviewed, questions you want answered. I want to do what is too often, I think, overlooked in this whole podcast and social media scene. I want you to tell me what you want. Seriously, email me directly. I'm nick@nickhardwick.com. That's nick@nickhardwick.com. I know, it's a little pretentious. If you write, I promise I will write you back and we will do our best to fulfill those requests that you have. Okay, thank you. Now, this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Hardwick.life, foundational elements for a fulfilled life. We got a great array, exciting array of new performance products that are out now. They are built to complement our other pharmaceutical grade supplement line that includes Brain Life, Gut Life, Joint Life, Foundation Life. They are awesome new products. They include Build Life. It's an incredibly pure New Zealand grass-fed whey protein. Fuel Life, which is a small meal replacement that includes New Zealand grass-fed whey protein. I like that one with a little bit of oatmeal. The boys love that one too. I also put it at noon sometimes or a little bit afternoon in with a teaspoon, maybe a little bit more of matcha green tea. Shake that baby up and it holds me over till dinner. And then we have another one called Pump Life. It's a pre-workout, pre-combat sports energy formula designed with cognition and neuroprotection in mind, as it's got theanine, caffeine, which really gets you going. Then it's got creatine, it's got 3 grams of that, and glutathione, all in one convenient blend. Now, creatine and glutathione, as we've had multiple guests now say that their neurocognitive neuroprotection benefits are out there. That's why they are in that blend. I put a scoop of Pump in with either a Fuel or a Build every morning before I work out. I use that Fuel if I need a little bit more energy. I'm going to go super hard, and I use Build on the other days to stop that muscle loss and atrophy that happens overnight. We can't wait for you guys to try. And did you know this? When you buy any products and you subscribe, you're automatically going to save 20% forever on everything. One other thing that I put into my body since the company was founded in 2017 is Bubs Naturals collagen protein and MCT oil powder. One way or another, I've used them religiously, daily. I swear by it. I love it at home. I love it on the road. They've got convenient packs for you to take while you're traveling. I mean, they are a really, really good company. I know you're going to love it. Lots of listeners have taken me up on the recommendation, and they continue to send me pictures of them using Bubs in one way or another. Their collagen blends so effortlessly. I actually think you can tell the quality level of their product. Just put a scoop in your coffee and watch this cool cascading effect of dissolution take place. Maybe it's just me. Their MCT oil powder is so daggum creamy. It's so hard to beat. And the powder version is convenient. Like I said, take it on the road. It's never messy like the actual oil itself. So it's a perfect, perfect concoction. It is NSF certified for sport. 10% of their proceeds go to a foundation, the Glenn Doherty Foundation. How many companies can claim that? So check them out at bubsnaturals.com. They're also selling at Barron's Markets in San Diego or in the greater San Diego area. So if you happen to be located there, go check them out. Use the code HARDWICK20 for 20% off of Bubs Naturals. Okay, we got a different type of show today. And this could be, should be, quite inspiring for all of us. Doug Bopst is his name. Doug Bopst on Instagram, B-O-P-S-T is how you spell that. Doug is a personal trainer. He's an author of 3 books. First one, Faith Family Fitness. Second one, From Felony to Fitness to Free. You heard that right. And the last one, The Heart of Recovery. As you can hear in that book title, Doug is a former felon. He's a former drug addict, and he chose to use his time locked up to beat his demons and to reinvent himself. He's now on a mission to help others integrate the lessons he's learned. He's been featured nationally in media outlets such as the Today Show, Men's Health, Cheddar, Dr. Drew. He was recognized as one of the 12 fitness heroes by the Baltimore Sun as he currently lives in the greater Baltimore area. How did he end up in jail? What happened in jail that led him to radically change his life? How has he maintained his sobriety? How did he move past the people in his life that weren't moving in the same direction that he wanted to go? How has he grown in the fitness industry? How did he write 3 books? Where did he start that process? What keeps him motivated daily? And how has he been able to reconcile his past to allow him to move with confidence into his future? I know it's different for all of us at Finding Center Podcast, but it's going to be so relatable for a lot of people. So many of us want to do amazing things in our lives and in the world. We don't feel like it can happen, or we don't know where to start. The odds seem insurmountable. Even for me, I've been to the top of one field. I'd love to do it in another, but the reality is this. No matter where you are starting, there is hope, and Doug is going to provide you some of that hope. I know you're going to enjoy this one. Remember, email me, nick@nickhardwick.com with show ideas, topics, guests, questions you want answered. We are going to get to you. I need you guys. All right, here we go. Here is Doug Bobst. What's up, Doug? How are you?
Man, Nick, thank you so much for having me on. It's good to see you.
Yeah, what a pleasure. Since you reached out to me, I've been Googling you, listening to other podcasts. What an inspiration, man.
Thanks, man. You know, it's been quite a journey. I mean, I kind of look back now and it's like, man, how did I get here? It's just crazy. You know, and I'm sure you can relate, you know, from somebody who, you know, you played in the NFL for a long time and, you know, it's blood, sweat, and tears a lot of times every single day to make it through the grind, right? And I think beating addiction, getting into recovery, working out, changing your habits. I mean, it's never, every day you got to put in the work. Rent's due every day. So I think so many people, they get this idea that like once you accomplish something, whether it's you get into the NFL or you, you know, get your dream job or you get into shape or you get into recovery, that like, that's it. Like the work's done. But that's when the work just gets started.
That's right. I love that concept. Rent is due every day. You know what? I forget who it was years ago at the beginning of my NFL career. It was arrival syndrome. And it was, you've never arrived. Even when you think you've arrived, like you say, that's really when the work's just begun. Even if you're at the top of the mountain, you've got to fight everybody off. If you're not there yet, you've got to dig, scratch, claw your way to get there. So rent is due every day. Arrival syndrome is real. Go back, if you don't mind. Talked about how you got to where you are now. A celebrity fitness trainer, author of 3 books, all kinds of podcasts, public speaking. You're really helping people reclaim their lives, which I love. I think that's just an amazing concept. And what a way to give back. And I've laid out your background in the introduction. But if you will, please, for the people who are meeting you for the first time, take us as far back as necessary to kind of lay that groundwork out. But how did you become you?
Yeah, man. So it's funny, like, you know, today, like you said, I'm, you know, a speaker, an author, podcast host, trainer, coach, everything else. But, you know, growing up, I was the furthest thing from what I am today. I was, it's like polar opposites, right? So anybody who's listening to this, who thinks they can't make a transformation, they can't change, they're not going to become whatever they want, or even like that their life's going to be the same forever, it's not true, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't have to put the work in, because you do. And for me, I loved sports growing up, Nick. I mean, I loved football, I loved basketball, I loved lacrosse. The problem was I sucked at sports. Like, I was just not good. I was the guy who like was so obsessed with watching ESPN. But I was like, man, I wish I could just jump. I wish I could run. I wish I balanced. I wish I was like coordinated. And so when my parents got divorced when I was 5, right? And then that kind of put me in this downward spiral, I guess, from a young age, because I was like, you know, what's wrong with me? Why are my parents splitting up? You know, out of my friend group, I was like the only one whose parents were separated. And so that created some insecurities in me. And then couple that with my lack of athletic ability, I was always like looking for some way to escape my pain, right? And escape who I really was, because, you know, in middle school and in high school, because of my lack of athletic ability and because of me being overweight, because I ate poorly as a kid, I turned to food a lot to numb the pain, like in my early years after the divorce. I was picked on and I was told that I looked like I had Down syndrome. I never had any luck with girls. So again, it's just layering these insecurities on top of one another that just came, that set myself up for the perfect storm that when I was 14, I got offered a hit off a marijuana pipe. And
probably like a lot of people do at that age.
Yeah, it's very common. Right. So like, you know, as much as I am, you know, for drug recovery and beating addiction, which I 100% am, I'm also like, you know, you got to be a kid, I think, sometimes too, right? I think part of how we learn and adapt is to learn and develop and gain our own understanding and clarity for things we shouldn't be doing, right?
Right.
But the problem is, the caveat to that is there's some people that when they do that, it sends them down this massive rabbit hole of addiction because either from trauma or the brain wiring or whatever. And so I took a hit off my first, pot pipe when I was 14. And I felt like this monkey come off my back where I could be at peace with who I was. I could have, you know, no worry about who I was going to be in the future. I had no worry about being picked on, whatever. And I was just checking myself out. And I was like, wow, this feels good. I got to get more of that. And it wasn't necessarily the high. It was more like the numbing feeling of what I was chasing. Yes.
Where you just kind of feel at ease.
Yeah, you do. And I was just like, you know, I feel at peace. I have no worries. Like, like, I don't care if I get good grades. I don't care if I, you know, have a girlfriend. Like, all these things that I was worried about, you know, because of all these insecurities, had just kind of been masked with the weed. And then, of course, like, I'm like, how do I get more of this? So then I began smoking every day and then selling to support my habit. And one thing leads to the next. And I'm selling, you know, copious amounts of pot by the time I graduate high school. End up, you know, kind of barely graduating due to my my drug habits and just smoking right around my friends, smoking weed every day, you know, listening to music and just that's how we would spend our time.
Right.
And then shortly after I graduated, you know, when you sell more drugs, you meet more people who are doing drugs. And I started experimenting with cocaine. And then I started getting really bad anxiety because I was snorting, you know, like an 8-ball of coke sometimes at night, selling a bunch of weed and just doing a lot of things that I knew I shouldn't be doing. Right. Like, I knew I shouldn't be selling.
You knew at the time, this is obviously not good for me. It's dangerous. I could get in trouble. However, you couldn't stop yourself.
I couldn't stop myself. And the ability or my yearning to fit in and feel loved with community, with like my friend group, that's all we were doing, combine that with feeling needed with people wanting drugs for me. And then also, you know, me wanting to check myself out kept me in it because I was like, all right, like, that's all I really knew. And
was there a bit of, in all that, in dealing, because I've been in that world before, not that I was ever dealing, but I've been around drugs before, I used before, and I know that world. Was there a bit of power in that, and a bit of, hey, this is our drug dealer, Doug's our guy, and even in as dangerous and unhealthy of a world as it is, you still have a place in that world, and you felt a little like you felt good about yourself providing and being able to provide, even though it was not providing in a great way, but it was still providing for a community of people.
Yeah, Nick. I mean, I think more it was just, I felt this rush from being the guy that people called for drugs because I had never really experienced any other success in my life. Like, I was bouncing in and out of jobs. Like, I was always cut from like sports teams. Like, always the guy getting rejected by girls for like the dances. So like, me being needed for drugs was like this rush of almost like a different level of high. Right. And so, you know, I'm doing the coke, I'm selling the pot, and I started getting anxiety attacks. And it got to the point where one night I was riding around in my face was all numb from snorting coke, and I was smoking cigarettes and all this stuff and eating fast food every day, because I was also fat. Like, I was a lot, 50 pounds heavier than I am now. And my heart started like really, really racing, and I started shaking and tingling, and it was crazy. And I thought I was dying. So I go to the emergency room, and I'm like screaming in the emergency room, help, help, help. And I'm like, I'm dying. And they're like, sir, like, chill. And it ended up, you know, being an anxiety attack. So this is back in like 2006, 2007. Like, mental health wasn't really talked about like it is today. So I had no idea what a panic attack even was. Like, I honestly thought they were making it up. And that's really what it was. So you would think, like, at that moment, you know, I had two choices. I could stop doing the thing that gave me the panic attacks, which was the drugs, change my friend group, change my surroundings, implement some new habits, and get my life together. But I took the other approach, was I got to stay with my friends. I don't want to make new friends, and I got to keep getting high. So I ended up trying a 5-milligram Percocet, which actually enabled me to continue to smoke pot and do the drugs without getting anxiety, because that was another level of numbing, right? You take a 5-milligram Percocet at the time, which was nothing to me, right? I felt that same monkey come off my back that I felt when I started smoking. And I honestly didn't know how addictive they were. I mean, I knew I wasn't putting like spinach in my system, right? But I just got so addicted to these things that 5 milligrams led to 10 and 20 and 40. And, you know, for those listening who have had any experience with painkillers, you know where the story goes. And it ended up with me putting 300-400 milligrams of oxy up my nose every single day, to the point where half my left nostril was missing. I was so dependent on it that I literally could not get out of bed without snorting a couple hundred milligrams. I couldn't function. I didn't want to get out of bed. I wasn't hungry. And
were you able to function when it was in your system?
Yeah.
Because I've been around, and it's a really nasty thing being around people who are addicted to pain medicine. I mean, I've been in a meeting room before where a guy that we weren't sure what was happening at the time. It was about 2007, 2008, and it was kind of before the whole epidemic really hit and the understanding was there. And it was terrifying for us in the same room with him as a guy that we came into the league with, and we were watching him kind of head down this rabbit hole where he would get almost frozen in meetings. He was so hopped up on oxy it ended up being, but we didn't know what was going on. We thought he was heroin. We'd see him fall asleep in the huddle. I saw him fall asleep at the urinal on the sideline of a playoff game. I mean, it was a really bad addiction, but you were able to, in fact, you needed it to operate at a higher level, or to even get out of bed, I guess, not necessarily at a high level, but to get out of bed.
Well, yeah, at a high, I mean, yeah, because my level without it was like, you know, negative 20. And then when I operated, when I had it in my system, I kind of got back to, you know, neutral, I guess, or a little bit above. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't eat. I didn't have any appetite without it. I couldn't like go out. I just, it was between the pain, I felt just immobile. And that's kind of what happens, right? You feel sick. They call it dope sick, where you feel like intense nausea, you know, hot and cold flashes, all that stuff. Right. And so, I mean, my life, as you can imagine, was falling apart. You know, I could barely keep a job. I had like 20 something jobs by the time I was 21. And Cinco de Mayo of 2008, everything came to a head. I was 20 years old. I was riding around with a few of my friends to go pick up some OxyContin. And I had a busted headlight that, you know, I had been meaning to fix for months. But of course, if it didn't involve getting or selling drugs, it didn't matter to me. And there's a cop running radar, and I flashed my high beams at him thinking it would prevent him from pulling me over for the busted headlight, but it gave him a reason to pull me over because I flashed my high beams at him. And he pulls me over. One thing leads to the next. He searches my car. I'm out of the car. And my heart at this point is like in the pit of my stomach. And just completely, you know, stunned, overwhelmed with emotions. I don't know if anybody listening to this has ever had a moment like this, but every bad choice I made just came to a head. All these like flashes like in my mind were like every
just rushing to you.
Yeah. Were like how I got to that point. Right. And I was like, you know, any dreams I had at that moment were kind of shattered. I was like, am I going to be that guy who's always in and out of jail? Am I going to die? How am I going to make it? And they found a half a pound of pot, $2,000 in cash in my car. So I was arrested, and I was charged with a felony drug charge, intent to distribute marijuana. And I got bailed out the next day by my dad. And you would think, again, at this moment, I would change or at least try to change. And I didn't. I was like, all right, now I have even more pain to numb. So, like, because I'm freaking scared, I'm going to go to jail. Yeah. I knew with my athletic ability and my, like, crazy anxiety that I would last, like, 42 seconds in jail, right?
And you didn't at the time have any idea how long you were going to spend in jail. So you're probably playing worst case scenario out in your brain.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking online, which of course is like the worst thing to do. I was talking to friends. I was talking to people, you know, who had been to jail that I knew. And I was like, man, I'm going to go to jail for a long time, because in the county I was in, was super, super conservative and just very against like drinking and drugs. Like that was like what they like really were cracking down on at that moment. And so I go to court in September 30th, actually, 2008. And the judge, I was 20 still, and the judge looks at me and he sentenced me to 5 years. Everything suspended but 90 days, 5 years probation, 200 hours community service, all kinds of fines and drug classes, and convicted me guilty of the felony, intended to distribute marijuana. But he looked at me and he was like, Doug, if you complete everything without messing up, I'll take the felony off your record. And I remember looking at him in that courtroom. I was like, man, I don't even think I'm gonna live to see 25. I mean, I was 20. Like I said, I was high in court. I was gonna get high when I got out. My track record was just looking like I was not gonna win, right? I mean, I had lost and failed every single time I had tried to change or even thought about trying to change.
This seemed like the end of the line to you.
It was like, this is it, man. Like 2012's coming, the world's gonna end. I'm gonna get killed in jail. Like I was having all these thoughts, because I mean—
Yeah, did you ever— was suicide ever a thing in your head? I'm going to jail, I'm just going to end this before it gets ugly.
I mean, I definitely had suicidal thoughts. It wasn't like, I never thought about like hanging myself or shoot myself or anything like that. It was more like I would literally crush up a line of Oxy and Coke or whatever. And I would look at it and I'd be like, man, I want to snort this and just never wake up. Or would people miss me? Because I was so low in that moment, man. I was like, what's the point anymore? Like, how am I going to beat this? I had no confidence in my ability to lose the weight I knew I needed to lose. I had no confidence in my ability to change my environment I needed to change. I had no confidence in my ability to get off the drugs that I knew I should be off of. So I was like, what's the point? And my biggest setback became my biggest blessing, because I reported to jail a few weeks later, ironically, a week after my 21st birthday, and detoxed cold turkey off Oxy in jail for 3 weeks. So like the last thing I did was snort like a few hundred milligrams of Oxy. I was like, well, this is it. I'm going out with a bang, right? And and so I get in.
Why not?
Right. I check in and, you know, I start detoxing, and it was like uncontrollable vomiting, bowel movements, hot and cold chills, you know, the nausea. It felt like I was trying to crawl out of my own skin.
Was there anybody there to assist with detox? How did they?
I mean, not really. I mean, they gave me stuff. If I remember, they gave me some stuff for like the nausea a little bit, but because you can't die from opiate withdrawal, it's not like mandatory for them to really like take care of you. Benzodiazepines, like things like Xanax, Valium, stuff like that, you can die from the withdrawal. Same with alcohol. So like you're more likely to be, I'm sure, to be taken care of.
Yeah.
But again, like you're in jail. It's like there's a lot of people in jail that, you know, are coming off drugs or in there for drug charges. So it was very common. And my cellmate was like, you're going to start working out with me. And I was just like, dude, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I looked at him and I was like, I could have been a model for Pillsbury. There's no way it's going to happen. Right. and that night,
who was this guy?
He was like a more jacked version of Brad Pitt from Fight Club is how I describe him. Cause that's kind of he was shredded. And I've been a trainer now for almost 10 years, and he's still the most fit person I've ever seen. I mean, just from his like dedication, his creativity to how he exercised and everything else, with just his body weight, like, and I remember like the way I really got introduced to him and we started talking is he was playing Scrabble, and I just sat down. I'd never played Scrabble in my life. I was like, I thought Scrabble was for people who are like senior citizens, right? So, and he's like, what are you doing? He's like, what are you doing here, man? And I was just like, you know, I got busted with weed. And then like, he just started unpacking my story more. Right. And I just started opening up to him. And so I just kept sharing like, you know, where I come from. And he ironically had a drug problem too, so he kind of understood. But that night I saw him working out and he was doing like thousands of push-ups, like running laps around the common area in the jail, like climbing the rails, doing pull-ups off the steps. Like, it was just insane. And I was like, God, what the heck's wrong with this guy? And so he ended up just continuing to nudge me and nudge me and nudge me about exercising. And, you know, I kept blaming. We would talk, you know, and we would develop a relationship, which I think is important no matter what business you're in, no matter what you do in life, to cultivate some sort of connection with somebody that comes before the transformation, right? I think the connection always will come before a transformation. And I was blaming my parents. I was blaming, you know, girls. I was blaming this. And he looked at me and he was just like, quit being a freaking wuss. And I was just like, well, what do you mean? He's like, dude, quit being a victim. He's like, you're like blaming everybody for your problems. He's like, did somebody like, you know, pick you up and force you into this jail cell? And I'm like, no. I'm like, no, again, you know? And he's like, did somebody force you to sell the drugs? Did somebody put a gun to your head? I'm like, no. He's like, you got yourself here, man. He's like, so it's on you to get yourself out. He's like, you can be like most people and go cry in the corner and be a sissy and say, woe is me, and blame everybody else for your problems, and you'll get nowhere. And I knew in my mind, I'm like, God, this sting. But I knew he was right. Cause I was like, you know, up until this point, I'd been a victim. I was blaming this, blaming that, blaming this. And I was just victimizing myself to the point where I felt so sorry for myself that I was like, I'm gonna do everything I can to feel even more sorry for myself. I'm gonna, you know, ingest copious amounts of drugs. I'm going to not give a crap at my health. I'm gonna just deteriorate every relationship I have in my life. And he's like, you can be a man and own your mistakes, own your choices, and know that if you're going to change, it's up to you. And so I was like, gosh, you know, and I think sometimes in life, man, we hear what we don't want to hear, but what we need to hear. And if we have that ability to really and truly like take heed of that and listen and take action on that is when change happens. But too many of us, we like to being coddled, and I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with, I mean, we all like to, you know, have our, you know, back padded, you know, sometimes, but I think it long-term, it gets us nowhere.
Yes. Long-term, it's incredibly detrimental. I take that into account with my kids all the time. It's like, I want them and they need to know that I love them. I care for them. I'm cheering for them. However, our philosophy at the house is I am going to discipline you until you learn to discipline yourself, because we're nothing productive as humans without self-discipline and self-mastery. And so that's, we start everything, and my boys are 8 and 6 years old, and it all starts with me disciplining you until you discipline yourself, and giving them it's okay. Emotions are normal. They're very natural, and we expect you to have them. We also expect you to be able to control them when the time is inappropriate to express those emotions. And that's a big part of, I think, the coddling is just telling kids it's okay, everything's okay, and I love you, but not everything's always going to be okay. It's not. It's a really harsh world out there, and if you're making poor decisions, then that's when it's not going to end up okay.
Yeah, and actions have consequences, man. So, and I think so many of us, we're not afraid to take the actions, right? And those the poor ones, right? But we don't want the consequences. And it's funny because, like, you know, this is how backwards it is, I think. We're not afraid to take the actions that we know we shouldn't take, and we don't want the consequences that come with them. Yet, we're afraid to take the actions we know we should take, but want the consequences that come with those. It's so backwards, right? So, so when I was in jail, you know, after hearing that, you know, after him continuing to nudge me, me being like, you know what do I have to lose? Like, I'm in jail. And I just gotten through my detoxes, you know, about 3 weeks in. He's like, all right, man, get down and do a push-up. And I couldn't do one for my feet. Like, and I couldn't. I was like, all right, let me try for my knees. And I'm in front of, like, all the guys, right? Because they're all, like, either watching TV, playing cards, playing chess, whatever. And I couldn't even do one for my knees. And I was like,
not one.
Not one.
Wow.
And I was like, dude, why can't I do a push-up? He's like, because you're fat. And I hated that. Obviously, I hated that word. And I was just like, dude, like, what do you mean? He's like, what do you want me to tell you, Doug? Your core is weak. You're fat. You can't hold yourself up. So, and you can't push yourself up when you're doing a push-up. He's like, you're fat. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, again, he was right. I mean, there was no way to sugarcoat that, you know? And yeah. So I was just motivated at that point. Cause I was like, man, like, what have I done to myself? Like, I could barely like walk up and down the steps without being out of breath. I could, like I said, couldn't even do a push-up. And he trained me when I was in there every single day for my 90-day sentence for the rest of it. And it got to the point where by the time I left, I was able to do a set of 10 push-ups and run a mile, which seems like nothing, right? Yeah. But what it did for me mentally and emotionally was life-changing. And it wasn't the push-ups and the sit-ups themselves or the running that, like, it's not like, you know, to make any kind of transformation. You just do push-ups and run, you'll be good. No, it was what it did for my mindset. It was the ability to get comfortable being uncomfortable. It was the ability to finally be like dedicated and have some structure in my life. It was doing things I know that I didn't want to be doing. It was being scared and living in fear of, you know, embarrassing myself that I was always like running from, right? Because I think a lot of times the reason that we're afraid to change is because we're afraid to make a fool of ourselves when we try. But really, like, we have to try to make a change. When we don't try, we guarantee ourselves failure. So when I left, I felt this light bulb that had never gone off in my head finally go off, like bright as can be, that was like, you're going to make it, man. You're going to change. You're going to beat this addiction. And I honestly, you know, as much as that was playing in my head, there was only a small part of me that actually believed that. Because again, my track record was so stacked against me,
right,
that I was like, all right, well, most of my life, I failed at everything I've even tried to commit to or tried to change or whatever. What makes this going to be different? Plus, you know, the relapse statistics and everything else from people who get into recovery.
So you knew all those? Did you know all those at the time? The relapse statistics, going back to jail statistics. I mean, you knew the odds were stacked against you.
Knew that people who went to jail once and probably go back again. I mean, because a lot of people that were in there were not in there for the first time. I mean,
right.
And so my self-esteem was so low, man, that was like what I was expecting. I had literally just expected to die young. I expected to be a drug dealer. That was how low I felt. And not to shame anybody who does any of that stuff, because I do think that, you know, people have to find their own way and that, like, you know, that can create transformation. And if you have to do what you have to do sometimes, like, you know, it's fine, whatever. Like, but my point is, I would take a very educated guess that most people, if not all people, that are either addicted to or selling drugs would prefer not to be doing that, right? Yes. That if somebody was like, hey, here's a free ticket, a get out of jail free card, where if I give you this ticket, you will no longer be addicted to drugs and you'll stop selling drugs. You can do whatever you want. Will you take it? They would say yes, yeah. Right? But the problem is, it's not that simple. So I got out and he gave me a workout plan that I still have framed.
The Tyler Durden character from jail gave you a workout plan on the way out the door.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that I still have framed in my place. So I never forget where I came from. And it's funny, man. Like, I share this a lot. Like, and I was like crying when I went in because I didn't want to go. And I was crying when I left because I didn't want to leave. So it's so weird because I just felt like, wow, this guy unconditionally helped save my life. And I remember looking at him and I was like, dude, like, how do I ever repay you? He's like, just don't mess up and pay it forward. And I never really understood what paying it forward meant. I was like, God, is that like a weird, like, religious term? Like, you know, this whole giving back. And is that for like people who are like pushovers? You know, like, that's where my mindset was, right? It was so like different than where I am today. And I, you know, I cried, man, when I left. And, you know, sometimes like we have like unexpected angels come into our lives who are mentors, yeah, to help us along the way. And I'm sure, you know, through your NFL career, you've had some incredible mentors and coaches and players that have notable notoriety to them that have helped you. But I'm sure there's also some people that you can remember that nobody would know who they were, but they had some of the biggest impact in your life, right? And same, yes, for me. And so I got out and stayed on the journey that my cellmate had started with me, followed the workout plan, hired a trainer, lost 50 pounds, and then got to a place fitness-wise where I wanted to help other people use fitness to change their lives. And that's where I became a trainer back in 2011, April 2011, I became a trainer. And just because I wanted to pay it forward and take the torch that he had given me and just pass it on to show other people how they can use fitness to change their lives, and was really blessed to build a really successful personal training business and develop a lot of relationships with some amazing people. And time flew by and my 5 years of probation was up, and I had never failed a drug test. I made all my probation appointment, did all my community service, obviously served my jail sentence, and it was time for modification of my sentence. So we wrote, my one of my clients who happened to be a lawyer wrote a letter with me, and went to court in January of 2014, and he took the felony conviction off my record. And I was never aware of how much one's life can change in a matter of moments. Like, everyone's like crying. My family's crying. I have clients that are crying there, like, da da da. And I'm like, what? I didn't understand it. But what I realized was, you know, now I could vote. Now I could, you know, if I wanted to buy a firearm. I mean, all the things that you cannot do as a convicted felon, I could never do, right? And then I also, like, just really started to believe that I was special in a way that my story had power, because that same day, I was on the front page of the health and fitness section of the Baltimore Sun for like training like a group of college kids that I trained like in the wintertime. I was like, God, this is so, like, it was funny. Like, my lawyer was like, Your Honor, like, it's no coincidence. Like, he was like holding the front page of the health and fitness section up. And the judge was like even messing with me. He's like, how'd you pull that off? Like, you know what I mean? And so that all kind of inspired me to not only do training, but to share my message and share my story. So I wrote my first book, From Felony to Fitness to Free, to inspire people to make the most of their second chance, turn negative into a positive, and focus on how far they've come and not how far they have to go. Then ended up publishing a second book, Faith, Family, and Fitness, which is a few years later, to help inspire people to cultivate, you know, spirituality in their lives for whatever way works for them, surround themselves with people who bring the best out in them, and stay mentally, physically, and spiritually fit. And I believe if you can do those three things, faith, family, and fitness, you'll live more positively, purposefully, and have prosperity, right? And then this is like 2015, 2016. I'd actually just gotten voted as one of the top trainers in Baltimore by the Baltimore Sun. And I was like, what's next for me? And I started to really, develop a stronger relationship with God in my life. And I felt like being called to not only continue to share my story, but to start training other people who struggle with drug addiction. Because I was like, there's no secret, or there's no way that, like, that this didn't happen for a reason, right? Like, my cellmate helped use fitness to change my life in jail, and I'm now helping other people to use fitness to change their lives. Like, I'm sure there's other people who are struggling with addiction that could benefit from exercising. So I added that to my wheelhouse as well.
Do you feel like, well, a couple of follow-ups. Are you still in touch with the guy from jail?
A little bit. I was a little bit, like, as I first got out, but, you know, we actually ended up grabbing a few workouts together. And then after that, we would go back and forth on some letters and messages. And I think he ended up going back in and coming back out. And so I just kind of lost touch. I mean, I still, like, you think about him, you know, every day. And I dedicated my first book to him, and I'll never forget where I came from with that thing, with that sense. But, you know, I became so committed to paying it forward for him, right? Because I was like, all right, like, I gotta follow through on it. And it's just surprising the opportunities and the connections and the relationships that came as a result of paying it forward, you know, in that magnitude of things. Because, you know, shortly after, I ended up, you know, seeing that the drug epidemic was at an all-time high, you know, the rise of opioid addiction, you know, heroin, you know, fentanyl, all that stuff. I was like, man, I need to share my story more, because there were so many people who went into AA or NA or everything. And I'm like, that's awesome. And I have some of my closest friends, you know, work a program like that. I never did that. And so
you just did it all on your own. You just did the 90 days in jail, found fitness, and then what was the strategy other than working out and finding a trainer and losing some weight and then having that, I guess, that sense that you said struck you before you left jail that I'm going to make this, I'm going to beat this, having that sense. But I'm sure there was also an overwhelming sense of your past that was kind of lurking there, waiting to kind of drag you back into its grasp. What was your strategy without using NA or AA or the 12-step program or any rehab facility of sorts?
Hey guys, I want to give a brief moment to talk about our newest sponsor, eBay. Whether rear, dead stock, or the latest release, you can find the exact shoe you're looking for. You can find anything you're looking for at eBay, really. I find all of my technical equipment there for the podcast, a lot of workout equipment. But as the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, your sneakers are meticulously inspected by the independent professional authenticators. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators verify the box, logo, stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. Each sneaker also receives an authenticity guarantee tag that includes a digital stamp of authenticity, and it protects sellers with a verified return process. And for sneaker sellers out there, if you're a seller, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers $100 and up, making it free to sell or flip your collection. Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. That's eBay.
Well, honestly, part of it came when I was in jail, when I remember my dad and my brothers were in the waiting room one time, and there was a glass. There was like the glass wall. Can I cuss?
No, no, yeah.
Okay. Just want to make, because this is just to put it into context, like, you know, my dad's sitting there and my brother's there, and he's like, you're going to rehab when you get out of here, and you're going to get into some sort of program. And I was just like, fuck rehab. I found fitness. Like, and then he started, and then of course he started screaming at me, and I'm like, why are you yelling at me? Like, I'm in jail. Like, I'm in jail right now. Like, how much worse can my life be? Like, what do you want? And so I end up leaving, like, I ended up like hanging up on him, like walking out of the visitor's room, walking up to my cellmate, and I was like, let's freaking work out. And he had never seen this look in my eyes before. And he's like, what the heck? He's like, what's wrong with you? He's like, what got into you? He's like, I'm normally having to like drag you out to work out. You know, he was the one setting things up and holding me accountable.
Right.
And the whole time there was guys in there that were doing all these workouts that were like, just think of what makes you angry when you work out, like when you're wanting to get those last few reps. I never could really figure out like how to tie that together and how to like channel that. Right. And I was able to start channeling it, which was scary, because I was able to like really think about all the freaking crap that made me angry and all the negative energy and baggage that I had in my life and channel it into something positive. And so that helped me, because I was able to, when I got out, that was my motivation, was proving people wrong. Because there were so many people that doubted me, my family, my friends, people in the community, in myself, obviously, right? And like I said, I knew I had two choices. Even though there was a small percentage of me that really believed I was gonna make it, I knew that if I took the other approach and banked on the fact that I wasn't gonna make it, I automatically was gonna lose. And I just knew if I could just do the simple things every single day and be so freaking relentless about it, I had a chance. There was no guarantee, but it gave me a shot. Yeah, so yeah. I knew that if I worked out, if I ate smart, if I stayed away from certain people, if I didn't go out, you know, all hours of the night, if I stayed positive, that I had a shot to make it. Whereas I also knew that, like I said, if I made the other choices, I knew where that got me. So I just took it day by day, man. And honestly, I wasn't even like that aware of like AA or NA or how powerful that was. So that wasn't like, and it wasn't really an option for me. Like, I didn't really have anybody who like reached out and was like, hey, you want to go to a meeting? Like, no one really did that, right?
Yes. So you're just beating it on your own.
I beat it on my own. And obviously I think that, you know, God had a plan for me. I mean, I can't make up this by myself. I did all this on my own, but because I think what started to happen is my grandparents took me in when I got out of jail, and they were like, all right, you're going to live here and we're going to pay for your groceries. We'll give you money for gas. You know, you don't have to pay us rent, but there's certain stipulations. You got to try to get it. You got to have a job, you know, or at least do your best to get one. You got to let us know where you are. You got to bring us receipts for any money we give you.
That's big.
Yeah. And you got to exercise. So that gave me structure. Right. And then like during the weekend, they lived kind of like 30 minutes away from where I kind of was running around and doing all the mischievous stuff. And the more I got into fitness, like, you know, a few weeks go by or a month goes by and you start to get into a routine and you start to get passionate about something, right? And you're like, wow, like I'm feeling good now working out, I'm running, I'm lifting, I'm like reading Muscle and Fitness. I was reading like Arnold's Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding back in the day. Yeah, yeah. That was like the OG book, right? And I was like, wow, I almost feel as good right now as I did when I was doing drugs. I mean, it's not as intense, right? I think so many times we want that intense feeling when we're looking to numb our pain that we'll go after it. But if we can be just patient and try some other things that bring us the same, you know, dopamine hit, but just more, you know, more in a more stable way, I think, you know, long term,
more balanced and more consistent.
Right. Yeah. And so like after a few months, I was like, wow, like I haven't used drugs in a month, 2 months, 3 months. And you start building this equity in your confidence bank. And I had all this confidence that I never had before in my life. And it all started with fitness. It all started with the fact that I never thought I'd be able to run a mile. You know, the guy who was looked like Humpty Dumpty, you know, who could barely like run or jump as a kid. I never knew or thought I could run a mile, right? I run a mile and then boom, what's next? 2 miles, boom, what's next? 3 miles. Same with the push-ups, you know, can't do a push-up. Boom, you do one, what's next? 2, 3, 4, 10, what's next? And then that bleeds into other areas of your life. So I'm like, all right, what's next? I'm gonna change my nutrition. I'm gonna stop eating fast food. I'm gonna start eating more things like, you know, I'll eat like oatmeal and eggs and, you know, chicken and steak and fish and started developing like a taste for that. And then like my friends and I, like God bless them, I just didn't have anything in common with them anymore. So it didn't feel like as natural for me. I didn't want to fit into that anymore. Like, because my entire life I was searching and forcing to fit in with a crowd because I had no identity. And I thought that was the cool thing to do. But once I developed my own identity and I'd seen what the other side looked like, I'd seen how good I felt off drugs. I had seen how good I felt eating better and exercising. I was like, I don't want to go back to that. And so I just lost interest in doing those things with my old friends because I was more interested in, you know, talking about exercising or, you know, how to, you know, get bigger arms or whatever it was back in the day, where my friends were more interested in smoking weed and drugs. And not that I have anything against them. I just knew they weren't going where I was going. And
yeah, growing apart. I think that's one of the great challenges in anybody making life changes, big life changes like you were. And going from one friend group and feeling okay making a different choice and a conscious decision to start acting, behaving in a path that you know is right for you, yet kind of reconciling that I am going to lose friends as I know them. I still like them. I still respect them. However, the way that they are choosing to live and the way that I'm choosing to live are two different deals. Talk a little bit.
I mean, that's huge. And I love talking about this topic is so many people get caught up in the trap, Nick, that, oh, I've known Johnny since I was 5, or I've known, you know, Nancy since I was 12. We played sports together. We went to grade school together. We were in the same you know, class for English or whatever. And you're like, I feel some sense of loyalty to them that it keeps you in that same environment. Yes. Right. And, you know, I believe that we need to start surrounding ourselves with people who have common futures and not common pasts. And what I mean when I say that is that very thing. Like, one of the things that I was caught up in was like, well, like if I leave my friend group, am I going to be the bad guy? Right. If I leave and stop hanging out with them, what are they going to say about me? What are they going to this or that? Right. But I had no identity. So like, that's all I cared about was what other people thought about me, instead of having my own self-esteem and confidence in who I knew I was, where that kind of crap wouldn't matter. And it's like, so I always tell people, like, if you want to start beating addiction or you want to get more fit, or like hang out with people that are more fit, hang out with people that are eating better, hang out with people that have common interests and common goals. And if you're looking at your friend group right now and your goals and your vision is to, I mean, I've just used this as me. For me, it's like, if I want to, you know, be a keynote speaker and I want to have a podcast and I want to share my message and, you know, create change and have impact and all this stuff, then the people that are in my corner need to be doing that too, to some level. Right. For the most part. Right. Because just like any team, like you'll thrive off each other, right? You'll build off each other and you'll elevate each other. Whereas if you say those very goals, and let's say I have those same goals, and my core group of friends is all, you know, going out and getting hammered every night and doing drugs and, you know, being pessimistic, and like, where's my energy going to be? Probably very similar to that, right? Because I believe that our environment can create a false sense of normalcy, right? People think it's normal to go out and get hammered at a bar every day because that's all everybody else is doing it there.
So that's like, what everyone's doing.
Yeah. So they're like, wow, it is normal. Like everyone else is here doing it. But then they step out. And then it's not until you step out and you put yourself in a different environment where they're not doing that. And you're like, wow, can't believe I was doing that. Right. And the same thing goes for like fitness, right? So if you are, you know, hanging out with people that, you know, are all achieving goals and they're crushing it in life and they're, you know, all about health and helping other people, like you're going to start to see that that's all you know is normal. But so then when you go out to other, you know, friend groups where they're doing things like doing drugs and getting hammered, you're going to be like, God, that is such a turnoff, you know, because now you have a new normal. Right. And that's the normal you want to create, right? You want to be creating a normal that's in line with who you want to be in the future. Right. And like I said at the beginning, you know, I would bet that everybody who's addicted to drugs doesn't want to be addicted to drugs. So I encourage people that if they're really serious about making a change, to surrounding themselves with people that are committed to making a change as well. Right.
And that's for everything. We talked to Dr. Daniel Amen, one of the leading psychiatrists in the world. He's looked at more brains than anybody. And I was like, give me your number one health and wellness tip. And he goes, find the healthiest person that you can stand being around and be around them as often as possible. And that's basically it. It's find your friend group, find your peer group that all of your interests are in the same direction and vector. And it's a really powerful force once you start putting more people together like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole notion of, I mean, I don't know, this isn't my original quote, but it's somebody's, it's like, show me your tribe, I'll show you your vibe, right? Like, it's like, whoever you're around is going to dictate what kind of energy you have, because we're humans and we're meant to be in community, right? We're meant to be around other people. And that's the one negative, I mean, one of the many, obviously, negatives of the pandemic is the isolation and the havoc it's caused on people's mental health, because we're not able to be around humans in real time anymore.
Right. Right. And I do feel like, and this is, I drive around and look at empty buildings all the time now, retail for lease, whatever. And I'm thinking, oh, it'd be a great space for a gym. And it's like, but we have so normalized home workouts and isolated workouts. And I'm like, God, I hope we get back to a place where people want to come and it's party together during the day with a really good, hard, vigorous workout and get that kind of energy going in a room. It's just as powerful as going clubbing at 2 or 3 in the morning and you're doing it at 5, 6, 7 in the morning with 30 folks, and it can be an absolute blast. I mean, that's a drug in itself. I hope we can get back to that kind of place in our country where that's acceptable, because I think for folks' mental health, it's a necessity.
Yeah. And just from coming from a background of somebody who got into the health space when I was, you know, early on in recovery, you know, if you think about, like, people were always like, well, how do I find a new friend group, or how do I really find people who are sustainably doing well? And I'd start a gym, honestly, because most people who are exercising, or they're committed to improving their health, they're dedicated, they have structure, they're making sacrifices, they have goals. And you'll likely find other people there that are doing the same thing, right? I mean, you don't really, there's not a lot of negativity in a gym, right? There's most people are pretty like motivated and they're inspired, or they're trying to be inspired. So put yourself in places where you know that it'll like level you up, right? Like if you go and you're like, oh, I want to get inspired, and you end up being like, well, I'm just going to go, you know, sit in a parking lot and just watch people, you know, drive by or walk into a store, and you think that's just hiding in your car, whatever, you think that's going to create change because you're hiding away from, you know, your friends or whoever, you know, you shouldn't be around, and you're just isolating yourself in a parking lot or whatever. Like, that's only just prolonging the pain. Like, you really have to take a chance and put yourself in a different environment that you know that there's going to be people in that environment that are around you and positive.
Go back if you would just no, go back if you would for a minute, because I know faith and spirituality, I don't know if you call it religion, plays a big part in who you are now. And I know a lot of people don't want to get into it unless you're like in a religious type setting and that the conversations are hard, but we've recently as a family, and we've never been a religious family, but we're starting to get more spiritual. And I just feel so blessed in my life that I can't just look around and thank myself for the work. I thank God for the health and the opportunities and capturing the opportunities. And I look around and I'm like, we have two boys who are fully capable. I got a loving wife who's devoted to us and our health. And, you know, I think of all those things. And so I walk outside most days and I'm like, who else? It's God. There's nobody else that there's nobody else to thank but God. Where did you start your spiritual journey and how do you proceed with that?
Yeah, it's so growing up, I grew up like old school Greek Orthodox, and my idea of what religion was, you know, if you're good, you go to heaven. If you're bad, you went to hell. And I knew I was on the highway to hell based on my choices and everything else I was doing.
Yeah.
So I said that, you know, what's the point of even trying to find any kind of relationship with God? Right. And then plus I also had that combined victim mentality that was like, if God is real and God's about love, then why am I in jail? Why am I addicted to drugs? Why me, this, that, and the other. And so I got out of jail and kind of just kind of did everything on my own, like I said, and, you know, just organically met new people and changed my habits and that sort of thing. And it wasn't until I was making really good money as a trainer, I was in incredible shape physically, that I thought I had it all together. And I was like, you know, but why still have this pain inside me where I was still having shame around my choices and being in jail. I was still, you know, had this lack of forgiveness with my family. I still had a lot of this stuff bottled up inside of me that I couldn't let go of. Right. And one of my clients was a pastor, and he's like, you should start coming to church with me. And I was like, no way, man. Like, screw church. He's like, you can come to Chipotle with me. And I was like, no, I don't eat Chipotle. And he's like, well, just give it a try one day. And I was like, eh. And I don't know if you know Todd Durkin. You know Todd?
I know Todd. Yeah.
So Todd's been a mentor of mine for a long time. And I was running with him one day. We were in San Diego and we were running right by Fitness Quest 10. And I was talking to him about, you know, life. He's like, man, you got to get some faith in your life, right? And I was just like, ugh, another person telling me to get faith. And it was just like another person like knocking on that door, right? And I remember, you know, a few weeks later, just coming home and calling my client and being like, hey, man, I think like I'm ready to give this Jesus thing a try. Because I had just like at that point, like I said, I was making great money. I was clean from drugs. I was incredibly fit. I thought that was all that was going to fulfill me to be happy. And it wasn't. There was always, you know, that need for more and, you know, looking outside of yourself and having a sense of purpose. And so when I called my client, I told him that. You thought he would have like literally won the lottery by based on what I told him. He was like so excited. And I was like, I was wrong with this guy. And then I go to his office and I give my life over. And I felt that same monkey come off my back that I felt when I did drugs. I can't make this up. Like I started crying. And I just realized that everything that had gone wrong in my life, everything that I had done happened for me and not to me. And then I might not have been proud of everything that I've done in my past, but God was, because it was used for his greater good to help other people. That coupled with the fact that that my cellmate, like I said, had helped save my life through fitness in jail. And now I'm helping other people do the same. I really couldn't have done that myself. Right, so right. I started diving more into my faith and joining like small groups. And I never, even to this day, like it's always I never like was the guy who would just go to church and check the box. It's more like about a relationship for me. Like I don't, you know, I don't judge people for other forms of spirituality. I'm like, just do you, do something that works for you. If it's working, cool. If not, try something else, you know, and hopefully that's improving your life. And so that's kind of what it's been for me, man, is it was more just about the transformation, right? That knowing that like this transformation couldn't have happened alone, that I had someone walking beside me the whole time, even though I couldn't feel it at the time.
Yeah. I think what you said is super powerful. You said everything has been done for you, not to you. Yeah. And it's really subtle, but it's really profound when you can actually believe that concept.
Which so many people don't, you know what I mean? So many people are in the, I mean, cause that's in the victim when things are happening to you and not for you, because when you believe that things are happening to you, you think of it as a negative and you think it's like a, could jab at you, and not to say that certain things can't hurt, but when you think of something happening for you, you're like, all right, like I accept this is happening for me so that I can grow stronger, I can learn the lessons, I can have the wisdom, I can become a better version of myself, or whatever it is, to come out on the other side in a better place.
Give me your daily habits. Give me a day in the life of Doug.
Yeah, so typically I would say, you know, most of the time, if I, you know, I get up, pray, take some quiet time, read some scripture. And, you know, it's definitely changed during COVID, actually. Because, I mean, normally, like, when I would go to, like, work, like, super early, I'd get up and I'd run and then come home and then come back, you know, go co-train my clients and then come back and then, you know, do some work here, there. But it's changed, obviously. So I still get up and then I try to get a workout in the morning. And then it'll either be clients on Zoom or it'll be clients in the gym. And then I'll come back and I'll follow up on emails, and I always have tasks to do either for the podcast or speaking or my training. And then I have clients again, typically in the afternoon and the evening. And then, but I'm always just connecting with people throughout the day. It's always like just following up with people, building relationships, trying to stay true to my mission. I mean, I hustle, man. Like I really,
you do.
I'm incredibly excited when I help people. So that kind of stays at the forefront of my mind. But, you know, I kind of keep it simple. I mean, I have a gratitude journal. I have this thing called the 5-minute journal where I write down a few things I'm grateful for every day. I write down some affirmations about myself. I write down like, you know, certain things that I want to get done, my goals. Because I believe that, like, if you just, everybody has long-term goals, right? And I think the thing that separates the good from the great is the people who take the long-term goals and they implement the daily practices they know they need to do to get those goals, right? It's not like, I mean, yeah, it's great to say you want to win the Super Bowl, but if you're not practicing every day, like, you're not going to get there, right? So the same thing in life. It's like, if you want to lose 60 pounds, but you're not doing the daily practices, the little wins every day to get there, you're not going to get there. So I think it's important to have big goals, obviously, but what's even more important, I think, is conditioning yourself to do the simple things daily that lead up to achieving that big goal.
It's the tortoise and the hare. We all learned it when we were kids. I've been teaching my kids this. It's like, hey, it's not how fast you start, it's how long you go. And in most businesses and most professions, it really is a battle of attrition. And it's kind of the last man standing in most things, and the most resilient one who's hanging out, who's hustling, who's chipping away on a small level every single day. It doesn't have to be a monumental amount of work being accomplished every day, but if you do something every day in the direction of your goals and dreams, you put yourself in a really good chance to achieve them.
I 100% agree. And you know, you can be like the king once, as they say, but you got to keep doing the work to continue to maintain the crown. Right. And that takes fortitude. It takes resilience. It takes being punched in the face over and over again, because that's what happens a lot in life. You get punched in the face. And many times we make our situation worse by the fact that we don't fight back. And we just let life beat the living crap out of us. We just stand there instead of like being like, all right, what could I do in the situation to make the blows, you know, less harder, right? I mean, maybe it is when you're going through tough times, making sure you're staying strict with your exercise and eating and hanging out with people who bring the best out in you and staying true to your faith or whatever it is. But too many people, they make the blows worse by turning to drugs and alcohol or feeling sorry for themselves or crying on the couch or whatever. And that bad day or bad 2 days, you know, in their business or in their personal life turns into a bad few weeks, few months, all because they mismanaged the adversity that they were facing in that moment.
How do you stay patient while you're pursuing your dreams? I think that's a big part of it, right? It's like you're dealt one blow and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's crushed. And it's like, no, it's not. Just get back up and keep going. Nothing's crushed here. It's that war of attrition. It's the last man standing mindset. But how do you, after a defeat, continue to remind yourself that what your purpose is, what your identity is, and how do you stay patient pursuing your dreams?
I think it's more, there's a few things. I think number one, it's just playing the long game and just knowing, and expecting that there's going to be bad things that happen.
Yeah. Yes.
Expecting and knowing that not everything's going to go your way. And just know, I've been really thankful that either from reading books or talking to different entrepreneurs or whatever, that they all have had massive failures, but the reason they make it is because they get back up. So in my mind, I already know that that's kind of coming. I mean, I don't like try and like manifest and be like, all right, I hope to God I lose everything tomorrow. But I'm like, you know, if something happens, I at least know it's happening for me and not to me. Like that same mindset, like, because I just know like it wasn't meant to be at this time, or it's not meant to be in the future, or this is teaching me something, or it's time for me to pivot. So I just keep going, keep doing the things I know I need to be doing. And I love this analogy that I use a lot. I call it like choose your suck, right? So what sucks is, it sucks to, when things are not going your way, to continue to keep your head down and do the things you know you should be doing, staying humble, staying grateful, exercising, you know, eating well, meditating, you know, whatever your best practice are. It sucks when your mindset's like kind of down to do all those things. But what also sucks is not doing those things and then losing yourself and having a bunch of regret and shame around your choices and, you know, letting a few months, few years go by and be like, man, I wish I would have just stayed consistent, kept my head up and kept walking. Like that sucks too. So like the one suck, you'll build resilience, you'll build wisdom, you'll build strength and confidence in yourself. Like confidence doesn't come from stuff being handed to you. Confidence doesn't come from like massive success, right? Confidence comes from, you know, getting through things that are tough and scary and that you fear. People fear losing money. People fear losing business. People fear getting rejected. But if you can embrace that fear and move through it and just keep even keel and just keep doing the, keep, you know, making layups, right? Keep hitting singles. Like, you know what I mean? Get the first down. Like if you can keep doing that over time, you'll win. The problem is so many people are trying to hit a home run. They're trying to score a touchdown. They're trying to like hit a half court shot when things are bad. They lose sight of what's worked for them in the past in the consistency. And so, you know, and to kind of piggyback on that, you know, I think that, you know, you just have to, you know, be consistent and you got to just keep showing up no matter how hard it is, because, you know, there's going to be times where you're not going to have it all together. There's going to be times where you're going to get thrown a curveball. It doesn't matter about, you know, what the situation is, it's how you respond to it that counts. And it's just, you have to just keep sticking to what works. It's kind of like the analogy I give a lot is with weight loss. You know, so many people have come to me and they want to lose weight and like they might lose, you know, the first, you know, 2 weeks, you know, they're dropping water weight, they lose 10 pounds and they might lose another couple pounds the next week and another couple pounds. And then all of a sudden the scale might not move. Like for a few weeks, they might gain a pound or two.
Right.
You're like, oh, I want to quit exercising. I want to quit. Like, this is not working. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, dude, well, if you do that, you're not going to lose any weight. And you're going to get fat. Like, what do you like? Is that what you want? And they're like, no, you know, and obviously, I mean, I don't tame who I talk to. I mean, if it's a female or whatever, I'm not going to talk to them the same way I would talk to like a guy who I'm close with or whatever. Right. So, but we often like go backwards and do the things we know that don't work, aren't going to work for our goal when we hit tough times, instead of, again, being consistent, just doing what we know we should be doing. You know, it's the weight loss, drinking a ton of water, you know, eating whole foods, moving your body, you know, getting enough sleep consistently over time. You'll break the plateau because, you know, you just kept going. Plateaus are, yes, plateaus are broken by keeping going. Sure, you can change up workouts, you can change up eating and all that, but you know, most people, to break a plateau, it's just about being consistent and just keep doing the things that they know they should be doing to reach that goal.
Yeah, because your body's fighting you. Your body's trying to maintain its normal, its set point. It's like, no, you're disrupting the ecosystem. It's going to resist. You just have to overwhelm that natural body resistance with willpower and discipline and staying consistent.
Yeah, and willpower, I think, is something that I think, again, has to, you know, it's not always going to be there, too. Like, I think, you know, there's going to be, like I said, some days where you're not feeling 100%. There's going to be some days where you're feeling off. But doing things like moving your body, eating well, journaling, listening to podcasts or whatever, kind of help elevate you in times where you're feeling low. And that's where community comes in, too, Nick, because it's like, I can't tell you how many times where I've even, like, I mean, especially during the pandemic, where I'm in, like, I've watched my fitness business completely be jeopardized. A lot of it with the gym shut down, that, like, I'm like, gosh, like, humbling, right? Because, like, I've been 10 years, the first time I've ever had my business affected, ever, right? Yeah. And it's extremely humbling. But again, like, I had a choice. Could I sit there and cry, like, in the corner and blame the government and everything else? Like, yeah, it's easy. I mean, it's an easy target, right?
Yes.
Right? Because, but, like, is that really going to get me anywhere? Instead, I'm like accepting, like, okay, like, maybe this is happening for me. What can I do? Well, I can train as many people online as I can. And if they don't want to train online, then cool. Like, I can put a lot of energy into sharing my message on podcasts and trying to book speaking engagements and growing my podcast and growing my platform. Like, I can control all of that. Yeah. Right. So, but again, this all came from just practice and time and doing the reps. Like, and I think so many times people want us to do the reps for them. And it's like, I've told you how to do a push-up. You got to just do it.
Yes. Yeah. And it's the whole process is, it's not complicated. It just requires effort. None of it is complicated. People know what to do. You could do the same workout every single day and get the same results. You could not even work out every day and get you could go for a walk every single day and get results that you're looking for. I know a gal who took, and it's been like 3 years now, and every day for 3 years, she's taken 10 plus thousand steps. That's it. That's all she's done in her life. And different. She still drinks wine. She hadn't, like, reconstructed her diet or anything, and she's lost 50 plus pounds. It's like, be active, move. And eventually you start feeling really good, and then you start making the changes and making more changes. Like you, it's like, what else could I do to get stronger? What different foods could I be eating that will make me healthier? You start getting down those paths, and I think that's when it really snowballs on itself.
It's all about building blocks, man, and just making those small changes that stack on top of each other. Because the people that really make it, sticking in the fitness, you know, arena, it's like the people who make it are the ones who just show up. They show up every day. They're the ones that aren't doing these crash diets. They're just the ones that have found their rhythm, found what works for them. They're not like YouTubing or searching like the next best thing. They're like, all right, this has worked for me. I've maintained a great body composition. I feel great. I'm sleeping well. You know, it's easy for me to kind of maintain or whatever. Like, I'm going to keep doing this every single day. Versus, like, we live in a society where it's like the shiny object syndrome, where we're like, all right, I'm going to jump to what this person on Instagram is doing, or what this new thing I see on TV or Netflix or whatever is, instead of, like, just really, like, being intentional with what actually works for you.
Yes.
And that's the best piece of advice I can give someone who's, like, even, like, trying to get started on a workout routine, because the best routine you'll do is the one you'll stick to. Like, if you don't like to run, like, you're probably not going to be able to stick to running. But I'm not saying, again, and I will also couple this with the fact that if you want it bad enough, you can do it. Like, if you want to, like, I didn't really like to run either, right? And I got into running All I'm saying is, though, if you find something that works for you when it comes to fitness, just keep doing that. Right. Yes. Like I found running because I wasn't doing anything. So I was run. I hadn't been running. I hadn't been doing any push-ups. And that was kind of what I found that I saw worked for me. And I think the same can be said for any other part of like fitness. If people are doing Pilates or yoga or walks, if it's working for you, keep doing it, you know, and just stop trying to chase after the next best thing.
Yeah. Speaking of next best thing, what's next for you?
What do you mean? I mean, for me, it's really just continuing to grow my podcast, The Adversity Advantage, and also just do more keynote speaking. I mean, I've been, you know, last year I spent a lot of time traveling around the country speaking to kids, and which is what I love. I love firing up kids, sharing my story and helping them not make the same knucklehead mistakes I made, and really like equipping them with the right tools when they're in high school, when they're in middle school or whatever, to feel empowered to not use drugs to fit in, to feel empowered to not use drugs to gain self-esteem, to feel empowered to not use drugs to like kind of check out of life. And that's my main mission right now, is just share my message and on all platforms, and then just inspiring people, man.
Awesome. Doug, tell people where they can follow you and learn more. I know the books are all on Amazon.
Yeah, books are all on Amazon. I got the podcast, you know, The Adversity Advantage, on all, you know, Spotify, iTunes, CastBox, that sort of thing. And then Instagram, I'm pretty active on Instagram at Doug Bobst. And then, you know, DougBobst.com. It's got my my presentations I speak on, more about my story, place to contact me. And yeah, I'd love to connect.
Doug, thank you, man. Thank you. That was awesome.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Oh, and by the way, so folks out there know, at time of recording, I know you're in Baltimore. We are set to watch Monday Night Football, Kansas City Chiefs at Baltimore Ravens. Can we get a prediction? Are you into football?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think LaMarvelous is going to have a night tonight. I mean, hopefully, right? I think the Ravens win by 10 points.
Nice. I think they're going to win too. I think the Chiefs are right for the picking, right for the beating. It kind of been, their performances hasn't been near as good as it was at the end of last year. And God, Baltimore's, they are so much fun for me to watch. It's like old school, new school.
So different, right?
Yeah, it's a blast. Hey, Doug, thank you.
Is that good?
That's awesome, man. Thank you. Keep up all your good work. I greatly appreciate this, and I'm just, yeah, really thankful for your time.
Yeah, I appreciate it.